Samsung and Apple schedule their next events. A review of the OnePlus smartwatch. The best feature ever comes to Kindle. Plus, your tech questions answered. What is going on? I'm Rich DeMiro, and this is Rich on Tech, the podcast where I talk about the tech stuff I think you should know about. It's also the place where I answer the questions you send me. And believe me, you send me a lot of them. Way more than I can answer in this podcast, actually. I'm the tech reporter at KTLA Channel 5 in Los Angeles. You might also see me on a TV station near you, because it's not just KTLA. Segments go out to TV stations across the nation. Nexstar Nation, we call it. That's the company that owns KTLA. They own a lot of stations in a lot of different places. In fact, a little tidbit for you. This is kind of a homecoming for me. My second reporter job ever, I actually worked for the same company. So worked there for 3 years in Louisiana, came out to Los Angeles and worked at KTLA when it was owned by a different company. And then the company from Louisiana bought, I mean, the company's headquartered in Texas, but the same company bought KTLA. How wild is that? So full circle for my career here. Wow, this week, what a week for crypto. Man, I don't talk about crypto a lot, cryptocurrency, but I mean, it has been, it's getting to the point where you can't avoid it. So Bitcoin is the big, you know, cryptocurrency, and it's been, you know, it's been going on for many years now. In fact, it's funny because I've got a friend who has been talking about Bitcoin forever. I mean, I'm talking way before anyone in the news was ever talking about it. You know, every party you'd go to, every time you ever saw this guy at a poker game, oh, crypto, crypto, crypto. And of course, you know, what do I do? Oh, okay, okay, it's too complicated. It's not for my audience. It's too much. And boy, I wish I bought some crypto when he started talking about it, because man, it's been a wild ride for cryptocurrency. Specifically Bitcoin. There's other cryptos as well. It's not just Bitcoin. But I am now actually, the more I learn about this, getting to be a bigger believer in it, because when you think about it, like, okay, so yesterday I wanted to send someone, you know, a couple bucks, right? And I was like, do you have Zelle? Do you have, you know, Venmo? Do you have this? Do you have that? But if they had Bitcoin, if they just had some sort of like Bitcoin, you know, if I could just send them that, that'd be so much easier. It's universal. It works with everything. It works across every country. It works across every phone, everywhere you go. It's just crypto. And so I'm, Tesla is accepting crypto. Elon Musk is a big believer. Then we had Coinbase go public this week. And, you know, when you look at the numbers of people using Coinbase, which, you know, they kind of facilitate, it's kind of like a way that people can buy and trade crypto on their platform. And so when you look at the numbers of how many people are using Coinbase, it's just phenomenal. And clearly, this is not just a tech thing or a tech nerd thing or a, you know, random people kind of thing. This is becoming big. So I'm going to follow it more closely and just continue to kind of get smarter about it, because I think the reason why we're not seeing it take off in such a huge way so fast is because banks and the government don't really have a handle on it. You know, they don't really get to control it, which is a little bit scary for them, because it's not really controlled by any one entity. And that's the beauty of it. But it's also flies in the face of everything we've known about money for so many years. Let's get started with the first part of the show about the OnePlus watch. This is, oh my gosh, I feel so bad for OnePlus. So, you know, like most things, they send it to you before you say anything, and, you know, you get to use it for a week or two before anyone else. And so I'm sitting here using the OnePlus watch, and I had such high hopes for this watch because it's a $159 smartwatch. It works with Android devices. It looks amazing. It's got every sensor under the sun. So you want oxygen, you've got oxygen sensor. You want a compass, you've got a compass on there. You want running, GPS, all on board, everything. This thing has it all. And it's got a nice big screen. It's round. It looks like a real watch, but I'm using it, and all I'm missing the entire time is my Apple Watch. And you know, it's really bad when I'm testing something and I actually take it off to go back to my regular device in the middle, and I just put it back on just to test it. That was really bad. That's when I knew I was having some trouble with this watch. So bottom line about the watch, okay? Like I said, it's got everything you need. It's got the microphone. It's got a little speaker so you can take calls via Bluetooth. It's got storage for songs, so you can store, you know, up to 500 songs on this thing. Transfer process is really slow since it's over Bluetooth. To be fair, transfer process is really slow on the Apple Watch, you know, but it happens in the background. So does it. It does on this, you know, it happens in the background on the OnePlus Watch as well. The Bluetooth was actually really strong connection. Charges really fast. The battery does last very long, up to 2 weeks. I'd say a week if you're doing a lot of fitness tracking. Now, about all those sensors, the fitness tracking was a mixed bag because I took a run that I typically take over and over and over, and it was like a third, or let's see, it said it was probably like 2 miles versus like four that it's typically. So the GPS data was not very good. And I was like, well, is that because I didn't have the phone with me, but you're not supposed to have, you don't need the phone with you. Did I do something wrong? So again, you just start thinking because there's nothing out there about this watch. You know, I'm reviewing it before anyone writes anything about it. So I'm just like, okay. The heart rate monitoring, I had it, you know, I took a cycle class, the Peloton, and I had the OnePlus watch next to the Apple Watch. They both seemed to have the same heart rate, so that was good. But then it's like, you know, the automatic tracking worked. It flipped on 8 minutes into a walk, which is just like the Apple Watch. You start walking, you know, a couple minutes later, it'll say, hey, you're taking a walk. Do you want to record it? Sure. It's IP68 water resistant. So again, all these things are like perfect. I'm like, this could be the perfect Android smartwatch. And after a week with it, I'm just like, ah, I, you know, here's where the trouble started. I could not figure out for the life of me how to change the time to 12-hour time versus 24-hour. And I email OnePlus finally, and they're like, oh, that'll be the future software update. No! You can't have a watch that doesn't really work with the time, I understand. And you can say, Rich, can't use military time? I mean, come on, get with it, buddy. No, I don't use military time. I love it. Well, I don't love it because I don't use it, but I appreciate it. And, you know, my brother is a big believer in military time, and it's annoying when you're not a military type. I don't know how to, you know, 1457. Now I know that's 257 because I've been using the OnePlus watch. The saving grace is that the data from the watch goes into the Google Fit app, which does slice and dice the data, and it's pretty good. I mean, everything on there was very good. So except I couldn't tell if the readings were accurate. So long story short, when the reviews came out and I saw what other people were saying about it, we all felt about the same way. It's beautiful hardware. It's got a lot of sensors. The software is just not there. The accuracy doesn't seem to be there. Could it be fixed with software updates? I think so. Could you somehow add the ability to reply to notifications? I hope so. Could you somehow add the ability to make it light up brighter when you're in the sun? I hope so. Could you make it so you can tap the screen to turn it on? Because it doesn't always turn on when you lift it. You know, so it's like all these little things. $159, available now. I'd wait to see if, you know, this thing gets some software updates that makes it a little bit more usable and functional for daily use. All right, first question of the day comes from Gil. Gil says, hey, Rich, what are your thoughts about cybersecurity for devices like Norton 360? Is it worth looking into and possibly obtaining? Thanks, Gil. Have a magical day. You know, I think it's a little heavy-handed with the Norton 360 stuff. I feel like when you install that on your machine, it just kind of takes over everything. And I think Norton is a good company. I think that they do have security front of mind. They've got great folks that are researching this stuff. But I feel like their approach is a little heavy-handed when it comes to the amount of things that they want you to do and the amount of pricing and the amount of programs and the amount of, you know, there's just so much going on. So personally, what I would do on iPhone, you don't need anything. So just, you know, forget about iPhone. You don't need any sort of security on the iPhone. It's built in, believe me. The only thing you need to do on the iPhone is make sure that you protect yourself from yourself, which means do not click links from unknown senders. Don't get curious when you see those links that, you know, you realize they're totally bogus, but you're just like, let me click. No, don't click. You don't want to do that. So don't click the bad links and you'll be fine on the iPhone. Don't install software from third parties, which you can't really do on the iPhone unless you jailbreak it. So don't do that. You know, that's the main thing. Don't fall for phishing emails. So those are the main things on the iPhone. Android, I probably, if you want to, I would definitely look into something for Android. So maybe like a Malwarebytes or an Avast. And the website I like, I've mentioned this before, is av-test.org. And you might have to translate it or get it, select English as your language. But they've got a lot of security choices for Android, for even Mac OS, which I still don't really think you need. But if you're, you know, if you want to be totally secure, sure. And Windows, and then, you know, there's nothing for iPhone. So I would say Avast or AVG for the Android phones, Avast or AVG for Windows users, and make sure that your Windows, what is it called? Defender is up to date. So make sure you go into your software updates and make sure Windows Defender is up to date. And then I would also, if you want, you can run something like Malwarebytes on your desktop to see if it catches anything. But those are the main things, Gil, that I would do personally, is just realistically the phishing. I think phishing emails and any sort of you know, scams, those are much more prevalent right now, and I think are the bigger danger than just random viruses being downloaded from the web right now. All right, good question. So two big announcements this week. Oh, do I have a trumpet? Two big announcements this week. Apple doing a spring-loaded event. And then, not to be outdone, Samsung sent out an invitation on the very same day for their Galaxy Unpacked 2021. Now, let's start with Apple. This was interesting because Siri spilled the beans on the Apple event. So some smart folks at Mac Rumors noticed that if you ask Siri, hey, when's the next Apple event? She would answer, April 20th at Cupertino. Go to apple.com for more information. And she doesn't really talk like that, but that's my voice for her. And so it was about, you know, maybe a period of 8 hours where she was talking about this event that nobody had officially heard any word about from Apple. And then all of a sudden, right like clockwork, I think 9 a.m. on Tuesday of this week, which you could be listening to this in 2027. So what does it matter, the time or date? But my point is, all of a sudden, journalists like myself and media folks and influencers and YouTube stars and Instagram amazing folks and anyone else who has a popular podcast and whoever Apple seems to like this week got an email that said, hey, you're invited. You're invited to a public event that is on the internet for all to see and share. You are invited, Rich DeMuro. Oh my gosh, thank you, Apple. Thank you for inviting me to watch a live stream on YouTube. Ah, you rock. I joke because typically these invitations that you get from Apple are actually very, you feel very special getting them because, you know, they invite a select group of people to their events up in Cupertino, but this is virtual. So, you know, anyone can watch it and I don't get any special treatment than any, I don't get a front row seat. I don't get an earlier live stream. I don't get it. You know what they should do? Apple, free idea for you. The journalists that you invite to these virtual events, we get a feed that is 60 seconds ahead of everyone else. That means we can send out our tweets of all the new stuff just a minute before the average person, and that gives us a little leg up on everyone else, right? Our tweets can go viral because they're in the hopper 60 seconds before everyone else. Do you like that idea? I love it. You know, everything this, one thing I've learned about being a journalist is that there's always a VIP section. There's always something better than what I get buying the regular ticket that gives me admission to something. You know, you go to a concert, there's always like a meet and greet before. You go to the, you know, whatever, there's always some sort of VIP. You go to a hotel, you know, you stay in a nice room, there's always a nicer room. There's always someone that's getting treated just a little bit better. And I've noticed that over the years. So anyway, that's the reality. But anyway, so what are we going to have at this spring-loaded event? I mean, what more do you want? We got a good iPhone from Apple. Do you really need a new iPad Pro? Do you really need a new Apple Pencil? Do you really need a new iPad Mini? Yeah, for the kids, absolutely. So that I hope they have. New AirTags. They've been talking about AirTags now for like 27 years with Apple. So I think the AirTags thing, I talked about it last week, how they're expanding that Find My. With the Chipolo, do you need the AirTags? But yes, people want their Apple stuff. So those are going to be exciting. New AirPods. I mean, the AirPods are perfect. The AirPods Pro are just about perfect. New Apple TV. I mean, the Apple TV is perfect. It's like is it any slower than it needs to be to watch Netflix? I don't think so. What more could they add? 8K video? I don't know. I mean, it's pretty darn good. iOS 14.5, that would be exciting because we can finally use our phone with our mask on and unlock using Apple Watch. But again, that only appeals to, you know, the folks that have Apple Watch, which a lot of people do. You know, new MacBooks, new that kind of stuff. I don't know if they're going to have a new MacBook, but maybe a new 16-inch MacBook Pro, which would definitely interest me with that M1 chip, but I'll probably wait till the next generation anyway. So again, it's exciting. Apple events are always exciting. It's, you know, as a tech journalist, when I cover stuff, Apple is king. I get the most response from Apple, more so than anything else I cover anywhere in the world. It's just the way it is. So now we've got the Samsung Unpacked 2021. Again, virtual event. This is happening on, oh, did I tell you when the Apple event is? Apple event is happening on April 20th. So if you're listening to this past April 20th, go in the past and listen, I don't know, or whatever. Galaxy Unpacked 2021 is happening on April 28th. And they say the most powerful, did I tell you the tagline for the Apple event?
Yeah.
Spring loaded. Okay, so Samsung's is the most powerful Galaxy is coming soon. Now, if you ask me as a tech reviewer, I just reviewed the most powerful Galaxy. I just sent it back, the S21 Ultra. I mean, wasn't that? And by the way, you know, these companies, I don't know what the deal is with Samsung asking for stuff back so quickly. I mean, I barely had the phone for like 30 days and it's like, I'm supposed to test this thing and you know, it's like harassment almost to get these things back. And I get it, you know, like, but can you give me a little bit more time to see how this thing evolves and use it just a little bit more in different situations? I mean, I might've wanted to compare it against the OnePlus 9 Pro, but I didn't really, wasn't able to. So anyway, I digress. Most powerful Galaxy coming soon, April 28th. So, teaser trailer was announced. Some are saying it's like Galaxy laptops. I it's got to be foldable phones as well in there, right? So that's what we have from Samsung. Most powerful Galaxy, that's on April 28th. I will keep track of all of these events and, of course, talk about them if I feel like it in a future something. All right, long email from Jerome. I'm hoping you can remove my confusion in so much. I'm not even sure I can keep my question simple, but I'll try. The bottom line, I'm spending $240 per month on DirecTV. Shocked? No, I'm not. I was spending that much for a while. It should be. I'm trying to reduce my monthly bill and look into streaming options. I have the top of the package that DirecTV offers. It's $190 a month, plus monthly access charges for 5 devices, plus service protection. Dude, cancel this today. I also pay for sports and movie pack. That pushes my bill to $240. I want to lower my DirecTV package, return the devices, and reduce my cost. I have 2 Apple TV devices. One's the new 4K. I've downloaded all the apps for programs that we watch. They work great. In my DirecTV package are the channels that we watch and plenty that we do not. As you know, the lower the package, the less channels. In some cases, after an app after downloading to the Apple will ask you for your TV provider. Obviously, I enter DirecTV. I'm off and running. Now, here's the question. Do I need to have the programming in order to work for the... And do I need to have the programming in my package in order for it to work on Apple TV? Can I switch to the lower packages that may not have the channel for the apps I downloaded and will it still stream? Thanks in advance, Jerome. The answer is no, Jerome. It will not still stream. So what's happening on the back end is it's authenticating that channel. It's saying on Apple TV, they're talking to DirecTV saying, is Jerome subscribed to Bravo? Because we noticed that Jerome's watching a lot of Bravo app. And next thing you know, DirecTV says, yes, Jerome is subscribed to Bravo. And you can watch Bravo and miraculously all the stuff streams. Then they say, now we notice that Jerome is watching the, what's another cable channel? I have no idea because I don't watch any of them. I don't know. I couldn't even come up with one. I don't know. So another channel. Is Jerome authenticated to watch this channel? Yes, he has a subscription and that's included. And so yes, it plays nicely. Now, next thing you know, you downgrade your DirecTV and now you don't have the E channel and, or I don't even know what these channels are, HGTV? I don't even know. I mean, okay, so you got those channels and it's like, does Jerome have HGTV? And it's like, no, he does not. So HGTV does not play the programming. So Jerome, It will not play, but here's my advice. You don't need all these channels. $240 a month for DirecTV. Oh my gosh. Get rid of the devices, send them all back, cancel it all, start from the beginning. Now, you said you already have all the apps. I guarantee you, when you start looking at all this stuff, number one, you're not even going to miss half the stuff that you're watching. Number two, you can find a service that maybe encompasses half these channels or a majority of these channels, like maybe a YouTube TV for like $85 a month. And you might have to buy some more streaming devices if you have five devices for DirecTV and you have two Apple TVs. So maybe you have to buy like two more Fire Sticks at like a cost of like $30 each. But get rid of all this stuff, be done with the satellite dish, and just subscribe as necessary to these different channels. You may find that Netflix and, you know, a couple other things, Hulu, might be just fine for what you need. The website that I like is called untangle.tv. That will give you kind of a heads up. You type in all the shows that you watch. I don't know. What's a show? I don't know any of this stuff because I don't watch any of this TV. So, I mean, Naked and Afraid, is that still a show? I don't know. I'm just thinking of stuff that I've seen in passing. What's the other one? Below Deck. I mean, all these shows that, like, you know, people waste their time on. I don't know any of them. But people seem to love them. Real Housewives. The Bachelor. I don't know. Is that a show still? So, you know, just type in these shows. It'll tell you where they're airing. And, you know, most of the time you can get them. My kids just started watching Lego Masters. And that's on Hulu. A lot of this stuff is on Hulu. I mean, there's only a couple companies that own all this stuff anymore. Anyway, I hope I answered your question properly. But that's my advice. Speaking of my kids, Microsoft Edge now has a kids mode. And this is fantastic. It's a bit late for the whole at-home distance education debacle we've been dealing with for the past year. But nonetheless, Microsoft Edge, by the way, if you haven't switched, fantastic. People love it. I don't know why I have not gone back to it. I'm still using Chrome. My Chrome was slow for a real while. I think I've narrowed it down to Grammarly, which is a plugin that I have, which makes things kind of slow on Chrome. But I love Grammarly, so I'm not giving it up. But it feels like when I disable that, that's when my Chrome speeds up. The rest of the stuff doesn't seem to really have an effect on it. So anyway, Microsoft Edge, check it out. I mean, I know it's from Microsoft. It's this weird kind of full circle. We've gone from like everyone had Microsoft back in the day with the Internet Explorer. Then Internet Explorer was evil and everyone downloaded the alternative, which was Chrome, or, you know, Netscape Navigator back in the day. And now we're going back. Chrome is now evil because of the way it tracks you. And now we're back to, you know, Safari and Microsoft Edge and Brave and all these other browsers. But it's great. We have options. So choose one that works for you. Microsoft Edge is a great option. It's actually built on the same foundation as Chrome. So it has a lot of the same features and extensions, but it's just the privacy is just a little more tightened up. The speed is a little more tightened up. And they've got some really nice features in there, like a reading list feature, which is really nice. A markup feature for like PDFs, which is really nice. So they've got some good stuff in there. This is a new one. It's called Kids Mode. And so Microsoft says that Kids Mode basically is a one-click kind of solution to keeping your kids safe online. And this is a huge deal with, you know, I know my kids are always online now with the working from, or the schooling from home. They're going back a little bit, but it's not full-time just yet. But my one kid has Edge on his computer, and he really likes it. He's got, you know, he's very advanced with this stuff. And so I like the idea of this kids mode because you know, what they're saying is 50% of parents have this handoff scenario, which means, you know, you're using your laptop, then all of a sudden you're like, okay, fine, here, use my laptop. And you hand it off to your kid, and now they're on an adult laptop with all these things on there that maybe they shouldn't have access to, like Google search for the full search or whatever. And so with this one click, you can now put them into a kids mode, and immediately it kind of locks things down on the internet. And so you just have to choose the appropriate age range, which is either 5 to 8 or 9 to 12, and that's it. Now your kids are in this this kids mode profile that kind of does a bunch of things. It puts on the strictest tracking prevention. It blocks the majority of trackers. And then it restricts the websites that your kids have access to. So from the get-go, they say there's about 70 popular kids sites that are allowed, but you can customize the list. And then the kids in the older range, 9 to 12, have like a news feed that's appropriate for them. And then there's also fun stuff like custom themes like Frozen, Little Mermaid, Finding Nemo, Cars, Toy Story, Coco. I can't wait to give this to my kid. He's going to love it. Except for the fact that it's probably going to block half the websites he typically goes to. But I love this. I think it's fantastic. The one feature I asked Microsoft if they had, which they did not put in, which as a parent is the one feature we actually need, and that is time limits on these websites. So you know that the number one thing you want to limit is their time on YouTube or their time on Scratch or their time on Slither.io, and it does not have that. And I said, you know, this is the thing we need. We need the time limits. And yeah, they're getting back to me on that. So the thing that I'd recommend in the meantime, which we use here, is called Circle, and it's a physical device you have to plug into your network, but it's actually pretty darn amazing with the control you get. And I'll tell you, it's a pain in the you-know-what to set it up. It's a pain in the you-know-what for dad and mom to actually watch things that we want to watch when it comes time to do that. Like, let's say I want to watch a YouTube video in the afternoon. Well, it's like, sorry, YouTube is already timed out for the day because my kids have used all the YouTube time. So I have to go in and, you know, give myself a reward of 30 minutes extra of YouTube. I mean, it's like little things like that. Now you might be saying, well, Ranch, I mean, why are you on the same device your kid's on? Well, if you got a TV in the main living room, you got to lock it down during the day for the kids, but then at night you want to unlock it so that you can actually watch stuff. So there is a little bit of a back and forth with all these things, but I like Microsoft's approach. The kids mode is definitely something that I think if your kid is using a device or your device, you should definitely download Edge and switch to it for your kid and just give them that little peace of mind. Even if you can't limit the time, just having the access, limiting the access to the websites. I don't, you know, the other thing is like, I don't know what the deal is with Google. I know you can change the search on Edge. Of course, it defaults to Bing, but you can change that in the settings. I haven't gone hands-on with this, so I need to check it out to see exactly how it works. Oh, we're just on the topic of kids. Paul says, hey, Rich, my high school daughter wants to download Artful app to share her artwork. Are there any other apps besides Instagram? I think she has talent. I'm her dad, though it doesn't count. KTLA is awesome. Thanks, Paul. Sent from my iPhone. So I had to look up Artful. It's not Artful. It's Artful, F-O-L. And it's an app for artists that is on both Android and iOS. And it looks like an Instagram, but for artwork. And I'll be honest, yeah, maybe there's some artists out there that know about this, and maybe this thing is amazing. And yes, you should probably be on it if you're an artist, but just get her on Instagram. I mean, that is the place. When I think about, you know, oh, there's an app that's specifically for this. Well, it doesn't matter. If the audience is not there, it doesn't matter how great this app is. I get pitches all the time for apps that are the better social media app and the free speech social media app and the better video app. It doesn't matter. If nobody's there, you're talking into the woods. You're the echo. Nobody hears it. So I don't know anything. Let me look up let's see how many reviews this app has. It's got 100,000 installs on Android, and it's got 237 ratings on iOS. So I don't want to knock Artful because I'm sure it's amazing. I'm sure the way they, you know, came up with this app is just fantastic. But the reality is, let's look up Instagram on iOS and Instagram on Android. And I will tell you that Instagram on iOS and Instagram on Android, Instagram on Android has, 1 billion installs. Instagram on iOS has 20 million ratings. So where do you think your kid's artwork is going to be seen more in this world? Instagram or Artful? Now, don't get me wrong. You can put it on both. I don't think there's any problem with uploading it to both of these. But get the audience on Instagram. And that, I know you said besides Instagram. So my answer is null for you, Paul. But the reality is, get on Instagram, build an audience on Instagram, and just have her figure out a way to build up that audience. She's got to interact with people on Instagram. She's got to follow some other folks that are sharing similar things. Just build that community. You know, Instagram doesn't just show your stuff to other people. You have to be a good part of the community for it to reward you. And that means spending time on Instagram. So spend some time interacting with people, commenting on other people's stuff, liking other people's stuff, answering the emails that you get or the DMs that you get. You got to be a good citizen, and it will reward you by showing your stuff to more people. All right, Spotify this week released or unveiled their first piece of hardware. It's called the Car Thing. And at first I was kind of like, oh, come on, Spotify, what is this? And the more I think about it, the more I actually think it's kind of cool. Now, I take for granted in my car, I have CarPlay and Android Auto, so it's easy for me to have my apps on my dashboard screen. But if you have an older car, you don't have that. So Spotify was trying to think like, okay, well, what can we do to help people that are in older cars that may just connect their phone via Bluetooth, you know, listen to the stuff they want to listen to? So Car Thing is, it reminds me of the days of Sirius XM when you used to have to get like a specialized player in your car, like a, I forget what they called them, but you know, you'd get it installed or you do it yourself with an FM transmitter. I always got mine installed because that was like my dream. That was me living large back in the day when I lived in Shreveport, Louisiana. I remember going to Best Buy and paying about $300 for someone to install the Sirius XM head unit, whatever it was, in my car. Not the head unit. It was a add-on piece, but you know, cause I had the FM transmitter for so long, but now I had it actually installed in my car by a professional, and it looked so good. It would turn on when my car turned on. It would turn off when my car turned off. It would fire right into the back of my FM transmitter, hardwired into my stereo system. Oh, it was so nice. And it sounded oh so good. Back then, by the way, Sirius XM advertised CD quality sound. They no longer say that because if you've listened to some of the stations on Sirius XM, oh, they are compressed into a way that you would not believe. I mean, it sounds like robots talking on some of the higher end stations there, some of the higher channels. So I always joke, my Sirius XM app, when I'm streaming through there to my car, sounds better than the Sirius XM in my wife's car. I don't have it in mine, but it actually, like if you listen to like Kids Bop, that's one of the stations I know. When you're a parent, these are the things you do. Kids Bop sounds better when I'm streaming it through my app than it does from the satellite because Kids Bop is so compressed. It's like, you know, I don't know. It must be like one, I don't know what the compression rate is. What was it used to be like 64 kilobits per second or something? I don't know. It's like one, whatever it is. It's really compressed so they can fit more channels. Anyway, what was I talking about? Spotify Car Thing. So this looks like one of those units from Sirius XM. You put it on your dashboard, you connect it to your power, and then it connects to your phone via Bluetooth. And I think that's how it connects. It looks that way. And then they have a screen, they have a dial, and then there's four preset buttons. So it works in various ways. You can use your voice. So you can say, hey, Spotify, and then ask for a song, album, artist, station, playlist, or podcast. There's four microphones, so they say it works even when your windows are down. Then you have a dial, so you see this little screen. You can dial to select, pause, play, discover, whatever. Then there's also the touch screen, so you can just use the touch screen. Or there's four preset buttons. Now, this is when I thought it was pretty cool. The preset buttons are pretty darn smart. And so you get in your car, you press one of the presets. That could be for your podcast, your favorite podcast. That could be for your favorite station. That could be for your favorite album, favorite whatever. That's pretty cool. And so, I don't know. I love that. So the Car Thing is free. If you have a Spotify premium subscription, you got to pay $7 for shipping. Now, this is not for someone who has CarPlay because they're basically saying, no, this is for folks that don't have CarPlay. Like if you don't have a screen, this is kind of the screen in your car. And the idea that Spotify says that's sort of faster than trying to use your phone screen. Now, it probably is, but honestly, with all the clutter in your car, I would probably get a good high-quality mount from something like ProClip USA and use that to mount your phone, and then you know you can control your phone because you can see the screen better. So that's what I would do, ProClipUSA.com, and that will, you know, it's not free. This Spotify is free, but it's a big kind of bulky thing to have in your car. I like the preset buttons. I will give it that. I wish that the phone screen had that somehow, but it doesn't. So anyway, you know, there's a waiting list too, by the way. So if you want to get one of these things, it's not like you can just order on Spotify immediately and get it tomorrow. It's not, that's not how they're doing it. So beware. All right. Hey, Rich, I'm inquiring about your opinion on all the photo gadgets that flash across our Instagram. I have so many photos that are not backed up to my computer. I would like to get them off my phone and save them. I'm in my early 70s, so I'm not keen on backing up anymore. I'm interested in a gadget fob that's fairly easy to use on iPhone. I started following you on Instagram several months ago. I also listened to your input on KTLA. No Facebook here. Thank you, Chris B. Sent for my iPhone. Chris, I've got the perfect gadget. It is across the room. Should I go get it? Let me get it so I can talk about it. Hang on,
Chris. I'm getting the gadget. Can you still hear me? I'm getting the gadget. Okay, I've got it right here in front of me. And believe me, I will be doing a segment on this gadget very soon. It's called the SanDisk iXpand Flash Drive Lux. 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 Oh, that's not Lux, but I used to have some chimes that would sound like a harp, but I don't have them anymore. So that'll be my Lux. This is a brand new gadget, just came out, and it is fantastic. And I think it blows away all those bogus photo gadgets they're advertising on your Instagram feed, because this is from a legit company, SanDisk. SanDisk knows a thing or two about backing things up and storage and hard drives and flash storage and whatever. Now, the beauty of this device, they've had these before, but this one is brand new because it is lightning on, it's a flash drive that is lightning on one end and then USB-C on the other end. The idea is that you plug it into your iPhone. It has special software called SanDisk iXpand Drive, which again, the software is going to be better on this because it is from SanDisk versus some random company. And the software's been hit or miss in the past, but I think it's gotten better. And what you do is you plug this into your phone. It'll even say, hey, you got to download the software to use this, Kent. Do you want to? And you say, sure. And then you download the software. It says, do you want to back up your photos? It'll automatically back up your photos from your phone. It'll put them on this little drive, and you don't have to do anything more. You can just keep this drive in a safe place. Or you can then take the other end of the drive, if you have a USB-C computer, and pop it into your computer and now copy the photos onto your computer. Now, I would recommend, and I always say this when I talk about photos, you got to have them in two places. Got to have them in the cloud and somewhere else, or sorry, you got to have them, just pick two places, whether that's two physical drives, two cloud places, a cloud place and a physical drive, whatever. Just make sure that your device, your photos are in two places. So you can, if you wanted to be really wild, Chris, you could buy two of these iXpand flash drive Lux. I don't know why the music doesn't fit, but you know, I got to do something when I say Lux. Or, and then just, you know, do this twice and, you know, back up your photos twice or copy them to whatever. You get what I'm saying, right? So this device is the latest and greatest. They also make another, it's just called the SanDisk iXpand flash drive. I think it's whatever. They have a bunch of models. So pick the one that's right for you. And that's what I would use. It's super easy. It's super simple. And if the photos are still on your phone, that counts as your first place. So if you're not running out of storage on your phone, just keep them on your phone and then back them up to the flash drive and you are good to go, Chris. No more worries. Now you've got this little flash drive. Just plug it in every month or every week, whatever, and it will figure out which photos it's already copied. It'll copy the new ones. It's pretty, pretty good. Pretty, pretty, pretty good for my Curb Your Enthusiasm friends out there. You know, I can never watch HBO ever again after the intro of the and then it's like, in my mind, it's going to go boom, 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 ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum. I can't, every single show. Now, maybe that's because Curb was like one of the biggest shows I watched on. Maybe if you watched like Game of Thrones, maybe they did something there that, you know, the intro went into the show. I don't know. I never watched it. So, but for me, whenever I see that, it's always forever, forever going to be Curb Your Enthusiasm. Dum, dum, dum. Did I lose everyone?
Did I lose you yet? Are you still there? You know, look, this podcast is called Rich on Tech. So you're going to get rich on tech. Now, I'm not going to say rich on tech and also weird voices and my thoughts on things and random diatribes and also conspiracy theories, which I don't really share. So I wouldn't really say that. Okay. Where are we at? Kindle. Oh my gosh. The Kindle has gotten the best feature in the world. The Kindle can now display book covers on the lock screen. I'm going to give three dings for that because this is quite possibly the feature that has been missing from the Kindle forever. This comes from goodreader.com. I cannot take responsibility or credit for finding this feature. But here is the scenario with me. I am reading an amazing book on the Kindle, and I can't tell you what the name is or who wrote it or what the cover looks like because guess what? I forgot 2 minutes into the book. So people ask me, what are you reading? I don't know. It's really good. And it takes me a while to figure out what the title is, who the author is. And it's because with a typical book, you are looking at it all the time. It's staring you down the eye or down in the face, staring you in your face, saying, Rich, why aren't you reading me? Why are you still scrolling Instagram? Oh, I'm sorry, book. Let me put my phone down. But I can't. It's so tough. Why is it so tough to put my phone down? I don't know. But now your Kindle can display the book you're currently reading. So this is in firmware 5.13.5. So check the firmware. I know you do that all the time on your Kindle. No, not really. These things just get random updates. But if you want this feature, go into your settings, check for an update, and see if it's 5.13.5. Then go into your, let's see, device options. Oh, setting menus, device options. And there's something new that says display cover. Make sure it's checkmarked and boom, the cover of the book you are reading is now showing up on the book you are reading. Should I say the ebook or the digital device? I mean, wow. Why did it take so long for this? Well, I know because, you know, Amazon sells ad space on the front of the Kindle, so maybe they didn't want this. Now, the only thing that's unknown right now is if it works on the models that have the, you know, the paid stuff, like if you didn't pay $20 extra. So I have a Kindle. I haven't tested it yet. I'm going to see if I can get the lock screen to work. If it is, I will put a little video up on my Instagram at Rich on Tech or Facebook. You know what I've started to do now? I'm just a martyr for work. So now I have started to make videos because it, okay, here's what the typical scenario is. I make a video for, you know, in horizontal, which is good for Facebook. But on Instagram, they want things to be square or vertical. And so if it's square, it's got to be under 60 seconds. But if it's vertical, it could be as long as I want, which makes my life a heck of a lot easier, right? Because I don't have to sit there and try to explain something in 60 seconds or less. So now I've gotten to the point where it used to take me so much extra energy to like recut things to work for Facebook and Instagram. Then I just started recording everything under 60 seconds and square and putting them on both. But now I'm like, why am I penalizing folks that are watching on a particular platform by making, you know, a 60 second square video on Facebook when folks on Facebook are much more accustomed to watching longer videos? Or why am I not putting it full Instagram 16:9 vertical on Instagram when I can go longer and explain things better? I just have to frame it up better. Anyway, so my point is I'm now making double the videos. So yesterday, for instance, I was at LACMA and they have this giant rock that's just suspended over a kind of a walkway. And I did it, you know, the standard, you know, horizontal way. And then I'm like, I want people to be able to see. I hate posting horizontal videos in Instagram because they're too tiny. And most, you know, you're watching on a phone screen. You have to keep that in mind. I don't want you to have to watch a video that's horizontal. It takes up, you know, a tiny portion, a quarter of the screen. And why? When I've got this giant screen to work with. So you got to make it vertical. Did I just eat the word vertical? I said vertical. Vertical. We go through all this trouble of learning the English language, and then we mumble our words. And I'm guilty of it. My kid is guilty of it. I keep saying, let's not mumble. We have this beautiful language we use. Let's enunciate. And when we talk, the faster we talk, the faster we cut off all of these things. And we people still understand us because we can talk so fast and people understand what we're saying. But the reality is, slow down. Enunciate. So there's this giant rock and I ended up recording it horizontal. Then I ended up recording it vertical. And guess what? The end result is beautiful because folks on Facebook get to watch it in this nice horizontal mode. Folks on Instagram can see because it uses up the entire screen. Yes, it's vertical, so it's a little tougher to frame everything up, but you get it and it works. And so that's what I've been doing. So I don't know what my point was, but I guess I'm going to have to do two videos on the Kindle setting because I want to make sure that people can see it in their native format. All right. Enough about me. All right. Tom says, hey, Rich, love KTLA. Well, that's a theme going on here. I followed you for several years and now listen to your podcast. Oh, I better be on my best behavior with this answer because Tom will be listening. I accidentally deleted about 9,000 emails while using Outlook on my iPad. Yes, 9K. Wasn't paying attention to what I did. And when I realized it, it was too late. Unfortunately, my Outlook settings were to mirror email on the server. So I lost everything. I know iCloud offers backups on email, but I need to create an iCloud account. I stopped at this point because I did not want another email. My question is, if I create this iCloud account, would that store a backup of my Earthlink emails? I'm open to your suggestions. Thanks so much, Tom. Tom, here's the difference, or here's what you need to know. There are two types of email account settings. There is POP3 and there is IMAP. And 99% of the time, it used to be every email when you would set it up on your phone or a device was POP3. And so all your emails would get downloaded to that device. Any changes you made would not be reflected on the server. Nowadays, it's quite the opposite. I would say 99% of the time when you go through automatic setup with email, it's set up as an IMAP. An IMAP reflects the changes on the server that you make on your local device. So let me give you an example. Let's say I have an Earthlink account like you have. I just set it up on my iPhone and boom, I'm using my email through the native app. I delete an email on my phone and I go to the webmail, you know, webmail.earthlink.net or whatever it is. And oh my gosh, that email's gone. It's in the trash. Well, it's because everything I'm doing on my phone is mirroring what I'm doing on the server. And so it's a mirror image. Now, if I were to change a setting on my Earthlink email and I did POP3, well, any changes I make on my phone will not be reflected on the server. So if I went to the webmail version, oh, all the emails I just took an hour to delete are still there. Now, why is that? Now, for most people, that's kind of annoying because why do you want to do your emails twice? But for you, if you want to archive all your emails no matter what and not delete them accidentally, you would want to set this up as POP3. Now, the other suggestion is to just keep it set up the way it is and just manage your emails and don't do select all and delete all, because now that you know the difference, you know that whatever you do on your iPad is going to be reflected on your server. So that's my advice, is to just understand the difference between those and just, you know, proceed how you want. If you want to set it up POP3, the problem with that is that you'll eventually run out of storage space on your webmail account. I don't know how much Earthlink gives you, but if you're only deleting everything locally and organizing it locally, if something were to ever change and you messed up your iPad and whatever, all of your work with your email over the years would be gone. So like all the emails you delete, you'd be like starting fresh if you ever had to re-download these things. So I personally just use IMAP. I think it's very, it's the most efficient way of managing my emails. And I just go through, delete the trash every once in a while, and just know that whatever you're doing on your local device is being reflected on the other side. And let's see, we have time for another question. Warren says, hey, Rich, I really enjoy your podcast. Do you have any recommendations on a soundbar for a TCL 32S301 TV? It seems like the voices are drowned out by background music and the commercials are loud. Hopefully there is one remote to control them all. Thanks, Warren. Sent from my iPhone. All right, so a TCL 32S301, I'm guessing that's a Roku TV. Let me look this up. Sure enough, yes, it's a 3-series Roku smart TV. So what I would recommend is what are called the Roku wireless speakers. And this is fantastic because they work with Roku TVs. They're $150. And they are two speakers that are wireless, and they're specifically made for Roku TVs. So these work with a Roku TV. If you have a Roku device, doesn't work with them. I know, it's complicated. If you have like a streaming dongle that you've put into your TV that's a Roku, not these speakers do not work with them. These work with Roku TVs from the factory. If you got a TCL TV, it's got Roku built in, these speakers will work. I recommend them for everyone with a Roku TV because they are simple. Simple. And what does it say? Look at this. Oh my gosh, this matches up so perfectly, Warren. You said it seems like voices are drowned out by background music and the commercials are loud. What does it say on the Roku wireless speakers website? Immersive sound for your Roku audio system. Crisp, clear dialogue and quiets loud commercials. I think that sounds like it's a perfect solution. Now, did Roku make the dialogue muddy and the commercials loud on purpose? You'd buy these speakers? Oh, I don't think so. This is not a conspiracy theory podcast. But wow, these will solve your problems. The reason I like these is they are simple. You plug them in behind your couch and boom, you've got two speakers on either side of you and you've got speakers in the front from your TV, speakers on the side, or you can put them on the side of your TV. However you want to do it. But it will work. It's $150. I would, I wonder if these ever go on sale. Let's see. Amazon. Let's see if they sell them on Amazon. I'm not even sure they do. They may not. But I would do, yep, they do. Okay. So they're on Amazon for $150. And I'm going to pop them into a website called Camel and see if the price ever goes down. And sure enough, no, the price really doesn't go down. So just buy them at $150. That's what I would do. And there you have it. Roku wireless speakers is the way to go. That's what I would recommend. And sticking to it. All right, one more question. Wow, we got a lot of bonus questions here. Jesse, hey, I follow you on Facebook. Is there a one-site solution or discounts to subscriptions? I'd love to have a subscription to the LA Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, New York Review of Books, Foreign Affairs, and New Yorker. I'm not rich, so I don't. What does that mean? I know I can read the New York Times through my local library. Thank you, Jesse. Jesse, I don't know of one site or solution for discounts, but I do know that you can get a majority of these through, okay, a couple ways. Number one, I believe the Apple, what is it called? Apple News Plus will get you, I don't know if Washington Post is part of it, but I know Wall Street Journal and LA Times is. Is Washington Post part of News Plus Apple? Let's see. Is it? Yes, it is. Look at that. So, yeah, I would. Okay. So I think Apple News Plus is your solution here, which is $10 a month. And I would use that. It'll give you Wall Street Journal. I think it gives you Washington Post. I know it gives you LA Times. New Yorker, I believe, is in there as well. How do you tell if things are in Apple News Plus? Is there a way to like see all the publications? Apple News Plus. It's probably like already on my MacBook, but there should be like a list. Is there a list of, oh, there it is. See all publications. New Yorker's on there. Wall Street Journal. Los Angeles Times. The Houston Chronicle. You didn't ask for that. Wall Street Journal. I think this is going to be the way to go. I mean, this is, wow, this has a lot of stuff. I should probably subscribe to this. The problem is, I'll tell you why I stopped subscribing to Apple. It used to be called, oh my gosh, what was the name? It was called Texture. That was a second name. But there was a name before that, and it was formerly called, oh my gosh, I can't believe I can't remember this. You think you're going to remember things forever. Oh, it used to be called Next Issue. Then it was called Texture. Now it's Apple News Plus. I love when I get a little history lesson into the podcast. But anyway, the reason why I stopped subscribing to Texture back in the day, and then of course I don't subscribe to Apple Plus, News Plus, is because if you're subscribing to 300 magazines and newspapers, what do you think you're doing with every waking moment of your life? You are looking at all those magazines and newspapers. There's so much good content. So if I was ever going to read a book, I had to, you know, get rid of this subscription. This was a good show. I think it was a good show. That's going to do it for this episode of the show. If you would like to submit a question for me to answer, two ways to do just that. Go to richontech.tv/podcast. Hit the microphone button to leave a voicemail. We may use it on the show. Or go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/richontech, and hit the big blue send email button. Also, I would love it if you would rate and review this podcast to help other people discover it. We got a new review just the other day. And I'm looking it up on my phone so I can read it to you. It was from, let's see, right here, Perky Bunch. 5 stars. Perky Bunch says, learning new tech. I enjoy listening to Rich. He has a good delivery. I learned something new from each podcast. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Perky Bunch. I appreciate it. So if you want to rate my podcast and hear your rating spoken on the show, go to ratethispodcast.com/richontech. You can find me online everywhere at Rich on Tech on social media. No matter where you live in the U.S., you can download the free KTLA Plus app on Apple TV, Fire TV, and Roku. Then scroll all the way down to the tech section and watch all of my segments, my TV segments on demand. It is truly a special experience. My name is Rich DeMuro. Thanks so much for listening. There are so many ways you can spend an hour of your time. I do appreciate you spending it with me. Stay safe. I will talk to you real soon.